All right, let's get started this morning. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 10, actually, is all I wrote down, 9 through 10, but we're just going to read verse 10, if I could get IL, if you'll get that for us. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 10. I want to start with a question this morning. What are your goals in the next 2 years? What are your goals in the next 5 years? You know, this is a question often asked in the career world, in the business world. This was a question that I was asked every annual review when I worked in the emergency department. And because there's something about that, it drives a person. It creates a mindset for the workplace. And I can remember 1 year answering, I want to learn ECG rhythms better. And I did. Got certified in that. I want to take a phlebotomy course. And I did and got certified in that. I want to get my RN license. I started. And I remember the annual review when I said, I want to become a pastor. And I did. This is important. And in the passage we're going to look at, Paul, he speaks to three arenas of calling that got him to where God wanted him to be, where God wanted to take him. And these arenas can help you in your pursuit of your calling. Let's read 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 10.
But by the grace of God, I am what I am, and his grace toward me was not in vain. But I labored more abundantly than they all, yet not I, but the grace of God which was with me.
Okay, hard work and God's grace. I want to minister on that. Let's talk first about identifying calling. Question number two, are you called? Right? This is an answer that you must seek out for yourself. We can go back and look at throughout Acts, we find Paul referencing his testimony. We find in various epistles that he references his testimony, how he had an encounter with God. And as a result of that encounter, he asked God a question. What do you want me to do? This is a question every believer needs to ask God. What do you want me to do? This is a question every disciple needs to ask God. What do you want me to do? And God made plain what he wanted Paul to do. God told him exactly what to do. God told him where he wanted him to go. God gave specific instructions. So, for you, the same is true. You must identify, ask God for yourself, God, what do you want me to do? Most are here because you have identified this answer. In some way, or at some point, or at an altar space, or at a rally, or a conference, or a serious man, or, you know, an encounter with God in another place, at some point you've identified the answer, yes, I am called. Yes, I feel called. Or yes, I want to be used in some way, and calling, I'm open to that. I want to know God's plan for my life. So this is very important because it reminds us that God is involved in calling. Verse 10 says, by the grace of God, I am what I am. That's an identity answer. I am what I am because God said something about it. Because God was involved with it. Because God, he planned something in advance. We can look at Jeremiah. Before I formed you in the womb, I ordained you a prophet to the nations. This gives us the idea that God plans things for our lives, things he wants us to do, things he wants us to accomplish, so it's planned out by God. Then God encountered Paul on that road. And as he encountered him, he has this meeting point, this conversion experience with God. And then God called. And then God formed in him. A man of God, as he's ministering in Antioch with Barnabas, and there they are. God is forming and raising up this man. God is doing something in his life there. Then he's sent into ministry, and we know the history now, all the book of Acts and all of the epistles that Paul was involved with writing. God began to use his life. God is involved in calling. I say that, and that's important, because this isn't just a fellowship thing. You get that from time to time. Well, you know, but the fellowship, I mean, the fellowship pushes, and the fellowship says, and the fellowship. This is a God thing.
Amen.
This isn't just a conference emotional thing. I can't tell you how many times over the years you get folks that you know, they want to bash conference because, no, it's just hype. You just got in the hype of conference. You just wanted to hear what you wanted to hear. You just thought you thought God called you. It was emotional. No, it's a God thing. And God wants you to identify your calling. He wants you to identify, just like with Paul. I am what I am. I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm at where I'm at because God. Because his grace in my life. Pastor Greg has said these three different quotes on calling. Calling is an invitation to purpose. It's God inviting you. It's God calling, tugging on you to a purpose. Calling is the potential of your life. What's the potential? What's the potential? I remember as a disciple talking about the potentials. Man, one day we'll be out there pastoring, ministering, pioneering, taking over. One day we'll be co-laboring together. One day we'll, man, who knows, one day we preach a rally. Who knows, one day we preach a conference somewhere. Never would we ever think a Prescott conference, But I am what I am because of the grace of God. We talk about this. Calling is the potential of your life. What nation? What people group? Calling, third quote, calling is of God. God is involved in it, and Paul identifies that. He identifies God in his identity. I am what I am because of God. So you have to identify it, first of all. Secondly, now let's think the second arena that Paul speaks to in our passage is about working hard. Verse 10 says, I worked harder than any of them. Pursuing calling takes work. I want you guys to recognize that. Understand that. Doing any work for God takes work. That's why we call it a work for God. Right? But in all of this, pursuing your calling is gonna take work. There's guys, they have this idea like one day I'm doing nothing that exemplifies calling or ministry. I'm doing nothing that looks to the slightest that I'm called. The evidence is missing, but in their heads, one day, because at some point I vocalized calling, that I'm not going to work at it, but you get a tap on the shoulder. Maybe you remember Pastor Greg walking the conference tent looking for people, and the tap on the shoulder, and everybody sees who's going back. Now I'm that guy. You get a lot of miles in a conference. Right? But there's people there, they're waiting for that. They're waiting for that. They've worked in no direction towards that. There's guys, they think, I'll live carnal. I'll live self-centered. I won't have a prayer life. I won't know a lick about the Bible. The only time I read it is when the scriptures are read at church. I'll do no evangelism. I'll carry no commitments in ministry, in faithfulness, in follow-up. I'll have a shaky marriage. I'll parent at a distance. But when I get sent out, man, I'm going to be amazing. There's no work. There's no work involved. There's no pursuit. This is what Paul is talking about. I want to tell you something. It takes work to pursue your calling. Pioneering takes a lot of stinking work. I remember Pastor Nate Rush, now he's in Santa Fe, New Mexico, but when he was in, if I remember, I was Colorado, and his oldest daughter at the time, Abby, at that time, you know, she's there, and it's a Saturday. What are we going to do today? Well, we're going to go on outreach. Again? That was her words. Because that's what you're going to be doing. 8 hours a day, 7 days a week. You're trying to build a church. You're trying to build a church, which is why build a file, build a template for people and follow up today. Get involved, but it takes a lot of work. Ministry takes work. Those guys, they think, oh, you know, when you're the pastor, then you just delegate everything. Can I tell you, majority of my ministry has been ministering alongside in Santa Fe. In Rochester, here in Prescott. Part of that is because I'm trying to teach. I'm trying to exemplify. I'm trying to show you. Right? But it takes ministry, takes work. Leadership takes work. If you think that the higher up you get in life, higher up, quote unquote, that somehow it just gets easier. No, it gets more demanding. You get more pressed. I've shared this quote many times. Pastor Artie Aragon, the longer I'm saved and the more responsibility God gives me, the more I need prayer and Bible reading. The more I need it. So, it takes work. I want to tell you, if you are afraid of work, either number one, ministry will not be for you, or ministry will be very difficult for you. It takes a lot of work. So what Paul is saying here is, he put in the work. When it says there, I worked harder than any of them, that word work means I labored harder at this. I toiled over this. It means to be tired. You're going to be tired sometimes in life, or a lot of times in life, right? It means weary. Man, even when you're pressed because of the workload, because of the responsibility, when you're pressed, but you press through it, it means hard working. There's some guys, they're present and working, but not a lot's getting accomplished, right? There's a difference there. It's hard working. It's getting jobs done. It's getting tasks done. So what did he say? I committed. He committed himself to the work. No matter how hard, no matter how many hours. I remember Pastor Greg talking about burning the midnight oil. Late nights, early mornings. No matter how hard, I'm going to do this. Why? Because God called me. Because this is what God wants me to do. He committed to it. Secondly, he submitted himself to the work. I'm submitted to this. It doesn't matter how tired I feel, I'm obedient to what God wants. I'm going to obey what God is calling me to do, what God is asking of me. Thirdly, he expected the work. He expected it. There are some guys, they're waiting, like, they're expecting to eventually not have to work. They're expecting to not have to, again, that delegation. And I'm telling you, it's going to be there. It's going to be there, so you got to get it done. Pastor Greg has said over the years, some things just have to be done. You can leave it, but just it has to get done. One of the things I learned in the Northeast is this is kind of their mindset. It's got to get done. I lived in New Mexico, land of mañana. Yeah, it's going to get done mañana, tomorrow. And that's how life is lived. And I'm telling you, in a lot of ways it shows. In a lot of ways, different cultures, different people groups, it shows. In the Northeast, it was interesting because, number one, work has to be done. So from the beginning, what is the biggest thing you're working at from the moment you turn 5 years old? School. School is important. School, you got to work at it. You've got to, and I mean, it shows. I've seen just, you watch, you know, like, you ever seen those movies and kids do productions? And it's like, nobody does productions like that, right? It looks really phenomenal. In New York, they do. They do. Because this is important to them. You got to put in the work. You're going to be on that stage. You gotta shine. And it's this push, push, push. It's work. It's got to be done. Career, when you get out of high school, before you know your career, you know your path. And it's college. You want a good living, you got to go to college. You got to put in the work. And then you put in the work in your career. And then you put in the work in your home. You know, in Rochester, you mow the lawn every other day. Because if you don't, you will live under your lawn. So you're mowing every other day. You're putting in where everything grows demonically there in the summer. It doesn't stop. I can't tell you how many hours of landscape I did in New York. So they're doing that on top of all their work. Why? Because it's got to get done. It has to get done. You get into fall. Fall is more work. You rake and blow every single day. So much so that they come with a vacuum every single day, this massive truck that just vacuums piles of leaves. And I'm not talking just little piles. It looks like that behind me, all along the road. It's high up, and they're just sucking up leaves all day, every day. But you got to get it done. It has to be done. I'm not exaggerating. Then you get into snow season. The moment it starts snowing, I woke up an hour every morning before prayer and I shoveled snow. And I shoveled every evening. But that's not just me, that's everyone. But it's got to get done. You don't shovel your snow, you're going to live under that snow. I'm telling you, it just has to get done. But that's it's a mindset. They don't complain about it. It's just part of life. And so I use that just as an illustration because Paul, think about his work. He's pioneer. He's walking this whole thing.
Yeah.
He's walking this whole thing. He gets to a place, he starts witnessing and evangelizing and following up. And on top of that, he's got to earn a living. What did he do? He was a tent maker. He's building. It's just got to get done. You just have to commit to it. I'm telling you guys, if you will expect the work, know that it's going to be there and just do it. It doesn't matter. I've got to be there. It doesn't matter. I've got to get this accomplished. It doesn't matter. I'm going on outreach. It doesn't matter. I'm going to follow up on them. Doesn't matter. I'm going to put in the hours. I'm going to go from one task to the next because it's got to get done. He expected it. So this is working hard. And Paul says, and I labored harder than all of them. Not only just in the work, in the commitment, submission, and expectation, but he had to work through people's opinions about him because he persecuted the church. He had to work through opposition. He had to work through tons, but I expected it. And look at the fruit. Called the greatest evangelist who ever lived. Wrote majority of the New Testament. Why? Because I know God called me. I'm going to put in the work. Let's talk thirdly about God's grace. So now, our text reminds us of a supernatural element. Verse 10, though it was not I, but the grace of God that is with me. Again, this is Paul's perspective, and it teaches us he didn't forget who called him. God did. Paul says, and while that was at the forefront of my mind, I also didn't forget who equipped me. Who supplied that? God did. God equipped me with what I needed. God gave me what I needed. God supplied it. Quote, that changed my calling personally. In a serious man morning, Pastor Greg said, God doesn't call the equipped. He equips the call. When he said that, I heard it and it's like something resonated. Then it clicked. I don't have to be everything I'm not today in order for God to use me. I just have to be willing and God will help me. God will help me. And so when Paul settled his call and positioned his life, God met with him every step of the way. And there was a grace that was connected. A grace to handle. I know sometimes you hear this stuff and I'd hear Pastor Greg talk about it and I would have to process it. Is this what I want to do? But then he would talk about the joy of it. Then he would talk about miracles. Then he would talk about converts. Then he would talk about the disciples. Then he would talk about the impact, the church planting. The vision continued. I tell you, God will give you a grace to handle the work. God will give you a grace to manage the work. God will give you a grace and he will help you to grow your heart, your ability. God will help you to accomplish what needs to get done. God will help you to minister. And that's the grace that Paul is talking about. But it wasn't just me. Yeah, I made decisions. It wasn't just me. Yeah, I made some choices and commitments. Yeah, I'm going to submit. I made those conscious decisions. I settled it in my heart. But then God, in his grace, moved through my life. I tell you, this is an incredible passage here because it still applies to you and I. And it's all of these three working together, and all three are dependent upon each other. Got to settle. I know I'm called. If you don't settle it, you'll do the roller coaster of calling. I'm settled. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to work hard. Committed to it. I'm submitted to it. I expect it. It's just got to get done. God's grace will give you what you need. So what are your goals in the next 2 years? What are your goals in the next 5 years? Where do you want to be? What do you want to be doing? It was 1 year from that annual review when I said, I want to preach the gospel. That's what I'm orienting my life towards. I told my superiors that. I vocalized it. It was 1 year later when on staff as concert director and sent out to New Mexico, New York, now here. I'll tell you what, it was hard work. It's God's grace. So God's grace. Absolutely, He'll give you what you need. Amen. Let's open it up for some questions now. Questions on this. Hard work and God's grace. Yep.
In identifying your calling, does that process continue once you surrender to the initial call of yes, I'm going to preach? And does God continually challenge you to other things?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, because while the overall umbrella of yes, I want to preach your gospel, I want to do this, then there's obediences in other ways, you know? The calling to purpose in New Mexico. Will we take that one? You got to surrender to that, submit to that. Then being in New Mexico, going through it, we started great and then hit a hard season and, you know, hell gets in your head. And I remember, I've shared this story many times. I've called Pastor Gray. Yeah, I think I made a mistake. Someone else needs to be here. Like, just not working. I don't know what else to do. He said, yeah, but God called you. If God called you, He's going to help you. Phone call changed my life. That phone call changed my... And I said, yeah, that's right. Yeah, God, you did call me. And I submitted to that again. I surrendered to that again. Right? God called me to Rochester. I made a decision to leave, travel 2,000 miles away, right? All the way across the country. Never been past El Paso, Texas before that. Now I'm going to go live in another place entirely. Submitted to that. Coming to Prescott, you submit to that. These are all invitations to purpose, and my life is lived that way. My life is, God, whatever you want and when you want. But those are all submissions and obediences to call me. Yep. So it does continue. Yep, Tony.
What changes did you do when you made the switch of a different culture mindset from New Mexico to New York?
Yeah, what was the question though again? What?
Because obviously there's some culture differences.
Yep.
Communication.
But the question was, what switches did I make?
What changes?
Changes did I make? Well, yeah, I actually didn't realize I was in culture shock. Upon arrival, it was a very difficult situation and a very different way of living, very different life approach. Even what I'm talking about, that the mentality was different. I found my voice in New York, you know, because if you don't have a voice, you're just going to get run over, you know. So it was one of those things that I didn't realize I was in culture shock, and I don't remember how it came to my attention or how I came across, but I read the book Foreign to Familiar. And that was a game changer. It helped me understand hot and cold cultures. And we sell that here in our book library. But Foreign to Familiar, it absolutely, number one, pulled me out of culture shock. And it really helped me to learn the language of that culture, of that mindset. And in many ways, I would say, made me a better leader, actually. So, but you learn that. So that was a huge game changer right there. To sum up it all, that would be it. Foreign to Familiar. Yeah. going from a warmer climate as far as in the natural, weather-wise, but even culturally, leaving warmth and going to cold was a shock for me. So, can be both now. Yep.
When you're like operating your call, you're acting in your calling, regarding knowing that okay, God's grace is at work, what's the difference between doing that, operating with God's grace, and knowing that, and the opposite?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah, it changes everything, Daniel, because you can work hard on your own, but you need the miraculous. You need the supernatural, which is why Jesus told the disciples after they saw him resurrected, and they said, "You're exactly who you said you were. We don't doubt it at all now. Like you, we're going to tell everyone about you." They had zeal, they had passion, they had excitement, they had, they were ready to do the work. But what did Jesus say? No, tarry in Jerusalem until you have power, because you need that. So it changes everything, remembering that, rehearsing that, reminding yourself of that. I can't tell you how many times, Daniel, over the years in seasons of revival and blessing and seasons of barrenness, God, it's all you, and you're going to help me, right? We like the idea of revival, but when you actually have revival, it's messy. It can be overwhelming, right? Which is why you need God's grace there too. It's both, and so when you have that and when you're conscious of it, it changes your entire approach because it's not just on you. God, I'm trusting you in every arena. And then because that's your focus, because he's your source, now he's able to deposit things into you because you make him the source in whatever season it is. And so, yeah, that's where the equipping comes from. It's a supernatural element we need. Yeah, Nathan?
You said when you went to Rochester, you found your voice. What would that mean for disciples here, and how can we learn that?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's a couple things. Number one, reading books on people skills will help you there because it's all the same. In essence, a lot of it is the same thing, just said another way. So I always am picking up anything on people skills, anything on how to communicate with people, how to spark a conversation quickly, etc. But then knowing cultures and understanding, which is why Foreign Familiar is, gosh, it's a really slim book and worth your time. And so if you'll do that, because at the end of the day, things are becoming more diversified, right? We have a big influx of people coming from all over the nation. So very quickly, I can learn, I can start a conversation with someone, I can read them very quickly as far as how I need to talk to them. Right? Whether I need to be warm, whether I need to be cold, whether I need to be relationship-based, whether I need to be business-based, is time important to them? Is relationship important? Right? You can identify all of that, and it comes with practice. So, read books, watch videos, number one. Number two, evangelize, because that's how you're going to learn how to talk to people, right? And then thirdly is ask questions. I was talking to someone, and you begin to build a file and a template for all of that. So, yeah, those would be three ways that you could do that. And to a degree, I had that, it was there was a confidence, but really, just the culture and climate, it changed how I approach things. Yeah, and that was helpful for me, personally. Yeah, Devin? Sure. Yeah. Correct. Really, the proper goals, and it's kind of one of those things I'm using, what do you want to do in 2 years, or where do you want to be in five, etc. And guys can do that, in 2 years I'm going to be, a missionary in Outer Ubangi, as Pastor Greg would say, right? But obviously God's involved in this. God raises one up, right, etc. So proper goals are fundamental habits that are going to create the man of God you need to be or want to be. So proper goal, I'm going to work on my marriage. I'm going to heal damaged areas because you're a husband before you're a pastor. I'm going to, if you're a father, work on my father abilities, being a dad, being present. I'm going to work on speaking into their identity. I'm going to be very conscious of that. I'm going to learn who my kids are, right? That home base, man, those first two are great goals right there. Thirdly, I'm going to commit myself to prayer daily. If I can't make it into this building or my schedule doesn't permit, I will have a meeting time with God. I'm going to read my Bible every day. If I can't make Saturday morning outreach, which simply facilitates opportunity for evangelism, but for whatever reason, your schedule doesn't permit, etc., but I'm going to be evangelizing. I'm going to be looking for that, right? Proper goals, God, give me fruit. Give me a couple. Give me a family. Give me a guy that becomes a disciple, right? Those would be proper goals. Those are things you can do and work on now. And you begin to establish those, it develops the man of God for when God says now, raises you up. Yep. It'd be the best approach. Yep.
You mentioned going to New Mexico for New York and all the Texas work.
Sure.
And I don't know how you were in the period like this shift. Maybe you were already a hard worker, maybe not. But in the beginning, if say you're not a hard worker, really, or you. It, and it seems like a drag, and you're just kind of doing it because you have to, and that's like miserable. At some point, is there a shift to where it becomes normal? Like, you just wake up one morning and you're like, oh, this is what I do now, and it was comfortable? Was there like a season of
crime,
kind of?
Well, yeah, I was working hard even before then.
Sure.
Yeah, so that was something in me, as far as you know, how I was raised by my dad, and then even hearing how Pastor Greg would talk, you know, I would always remember him, and Pastor Stephen and some of the other disciples been around a while would remember he'd always say, "I work my stinking butt off everything I do," you know. It's just like so I would hear that and be like, you know, do I do that? You know, am I that committed? Am I that dedicated? So I began to just kind of internalize that. And self-reflect on that, and began to recognize weak areas, began to recognize weak points, etc. But before I ever went on staff and became a pastor, in that, I remember him saying, you better be the best worker on the job. I remember him saying, it's not right to talk like Jesus and work like the devil. So all of those things were getting into me in that work side of things. And so I began to pray, God, give me that heart. God, give me that drive. Give me that perspective that it was honorable to God. Do all things as unto God and not as unto men. Would God be pleased with my work? And I was telling you, that began to show, that began to shine. Then I carried that not only into the workplace, but into ministry with our band. Began to carry that in anything I was involved with. I always was striving for a higher degree. So that was put in my discipleship. And what happened is I began to see the results. Because I did a lot of mediocre stuff. I did the carnal thing, you know, and involvement. And it was barren. It was without fruit. Then I began to see the results. God blesses this. I want that. I like God's blessing a lot better. And so that was the fruit, the results. That was a motivating factor. Even last night, right? I'll tell you, that was a lot of work, right? And yeah, you know, you were even there that Thursday. It's like, this has to, no, this can't stay like this. Let's take it to the next level. It's late. If you need to go, I understand. But this will be worth it. And man, it was, right? God help. And to see 15 people respond, for me, good night. That is worth it. That is worth it to me. 100% worth it. Every hour, haunted house. That takes a lot of stinking work. We're practicing 2 months in advance. I'm building soundtracks, all that's involved. But when you see those hands go up, 140 or whatever it was, respond, man, that's worth it. That's where people lock in, that's worth it. Disciples get made, it's worth it. So then it becomes your perspective. I know what this produces. So I know it's going to be worth it. Yep. So that's that shift probably you mentioned. Asking. Definitely, and you're, that's a good question, because no, I didn't lead it the whole time, but I worked alongside. So, in Santa Fe, I would say within the first 6 months, definitely delegated someone to lead outreach. I was there alongside, coaching, directing. Hey, when you barked at everybody to get in the van, that wasn't helpful. the way you said it. Things like that. You're a coaching director, but then people would come and say, where are we going for outreach, Pastor? And I'd say, oh, ask so-and-so, because they're the ones leading it. So let's check with them, and you'd begin to delegate that, and people begin to do that. Even now on Saturday morning outreach, you'll see myself, Pastor Hart, Pastor Galvan, Pastor Matt, et cetera. Some of the staff will be there, but who's running it? It's Anthony. Exactly, yeah, and it's no question. Or whoever the concert director is. And so that's the delegation, but I'm alongside, right? And some days I'm not here, because I'll let them know. I'll let whoever is on staff. It's just a busy one, I can't make it today. But, but that's okay, because it's in place. And so anytime that happens, it's not like it falls apart, because you are delegating. New York, the same thing within the first 6 months. Yeah, I don't know that it's the grace of God. It's just micromanagement that then hinders, growth in other men. So yeah, but the grace of God is more of what I'm talking about. Is He equips you, and all those negative things I talked about, the work and the time and all that. But the grace of God, man, it makes it enjoyable. It makes it to see those results, it makes it worth it. Yeah. Good question. Yep.
When you settled the calling, did you have like a place or anything like New Mexico or Rochester? Were those any of the places that was in your heart, or did you have a place in mind prior to that?
Yeah. Hawaii, of course. That still hasn't happened. No, I'm just kidding. No, I never had a specific burden for a specific place. But there are men that do, and both are acceptable. But in trusting my pastor, he didn't just say, you're going to New Mexico, and off we went. He said, I'd like to offer you Santa Fe, and I was like, right away, yeah, absolutely, we'll go. He's like, well, talk to your wife, maybe ask God about it, And so, but it was settled. I knew I trusted my pastor, and then New York, God was actually preparing me. I didn't know where, but 6 months in advance, God was preparing me. I felt, all I can say is unsettled. And I didn't know why. And then when Pastor asked about Rochester, I said, that's what it is. God's already been dealing with me. So, yeah. So, specific places, no. But in other ways, I could see the hand of God. Yep. And have that confidence that He was involved in it. Good. Yep, Daniel.
How do you explain to men that maybe come up to you and say, oh, I'm not sure if I'm called, you know, like, and they're kind of seeking guidance and how to know?
Yeah, just tell them, ask God. He's got a voice, you know, he can tell you. And so for a long time, I tell them my testimony. For a long time, I knew I was called. It was just one of those, am I, you know, oh Lord, when first let me, you know, when you hear that scripture, first let me go deal with this ox, let me go bury my father. That was mine. Let me first go get a career. And you know, again, some guys go that route, and that's the route they needed to go. That was part of their story with God, you know. But for me, really, I knew what God wanted me to do. I was just intimidated, fearful, nervous, all these other factors. But God worked with me and through things. And so, just ask God.
Is there an element to surrender?
Always.
To that?
Absolutely. Always. Yeah, because God isn't gonna tell someone who is dishonestly asking them. You know, God, what do you want me to do? I want you to preach. Are you sure? Because, right, is he'll talk to someone who wants to know. So absolutely, there is an element of surrender, yes. Yeah, John?
How do you separate God's voice from your own voice?
Well, what do you want to do, and what does God want you to do? Right? So very, very, very rare in my salvation experience have I done something that was really good, that was all me and not God. Okay. You know, typically for me and my experience, I wanted to rebel. I wanted to fight God. I wanted to resist God, the things of God. Right? So, yeah. And that's the whole point there, John, you know, Pastor Greg shares with us that God audibly told him South Africa. Mm-hmm. But how did he know it was God? Yeah. It's because he had been listening to God's voice for a long time. Right? Jesus said, I know my sheep, and my sheep know my voice. Yeah. So it's not so complicated. Yep. We like to complicate it because we have ulterior motives. Well, how do I know it was God? When I got this job offer for $5 million a year, right? So, yeah. Yep. Sometimes it's what we want to do. Good. All right. Very good, guys. Good questions.